Okay, welcome back. We're going to talk about another important topic tonight. Many of you, I'm sure, are somewhat up to speed on this because of the great book by Walt Mersheimer. The pro-Israel lobby is the topic of our next hour. Mark Weber is going to rejoin us this hour, the director of the Institute for Historical Review, IHR.org. He is also a terrific historian and an author of wide repute. He's written and lectured extensively on the power and the impact of the pro-Israel lobby and Jewish Zionist power for many years. Welcome back to the program, Mark.
Thank you very much, Jeff. It's a pleasure to be back with you.
My pleasure, sir. Listen, this story is fascinating because the Israel lobby, the Israeli lobby, but really it's the Israel lobby, is staffed by people who in many ways and in many cases actually have dual citizenship. They pursue various U.S. foreign policy goals in terms of lobbying, campaign contributions early on. They watch people. They support people who are sympathetic. They certainly have favors and markers that they try to call in over the years very effectively. But beyond that, it's a machine. It's really, in a way, I think, an entity that ought to be required to register as a foreign agent. There's a law about that, too, and we'll talk about some of that as well in this hour. U.S. support for Israel is now, fortunately, being realized by more and more Americans, dangerously harmful to American interests. America's unsuspecting, in many ways, and unquestioning, unflinching backing for the Zionist state of Israel is due primarily to the intimidating power of such well-financed Jewish groups as the American Israel Public Affairs Committee, otherwise known as AIPAC. This, we are, as a nation, we're under their control. How else am I going to sum it up?
Well, certainly with regard to foreign policy,
right.
That's the case, and it's laid out in great detail, not only in this new book by Professors Stephen Walt and John Mersheimer, but it's been laid out really for years, and this is known and understood by just about every close observer of U.S. international relations, of the Middle East, and of Washington. But what's new is that these facts are now becoming better known to a much wider American audience than has ever been the case. These things are understood a lot better outside of the United States than they are here, because Americans, take it for granted, because our media is far more slanted in a pro-Israel direction than that of other countries.
Well, it's owned by so many people who certainly are, in a religious sense, obedient to Israel, and certainly culturally they identify with it. Nothing wrong with that, except it gets to a point where it begins to take charge of America's foreign policy, as you said. But more than that, it tends to reshape, re-engineer, and terraform America's psyche to expect this to be the way things ought to be, and that's not necessarily the case.
Well,
as an example, Hamas is not an American problem. It's an Israeli problem.
Right. There's so many examples. But what I think alarms Walt and Mersheimer and so many people is that the price that Americans, that all of us are paying for the alliance with Israel is now a very high one, and it's getting higher. And this is really a feature of awareness about the background to the Iraq War. It's very clear that people in the high-ranking officials in the Bush administration,
mm-hmm.
Many people in the media, and of course Israel itself are all pushing very hard for the United States to attack Iraq, just as now they are pushing for the United States to attack Iran. And as Walt Mersheimer and as many others have pointed out, officials, some quietly, some openly, without the power of this pro-Israel lobby, without the influence of Israel, the United States would not have attacked Iraq and would not be considering going to war against Iran because, as I think just about everyone now realizes,
mm-hmm.
the war in Iraq has been a fiasco, has been very harmful for American interests, for the Middle East, and a war against Iraq would even be more harmful. The only country in which both the governments and the population were in favor of war against Iraq or now
mm-hmm.
against Iran is Israel,
mm-hmm.
because it's only that country which benefit from the great destruction and chaos and disorder that came in the wake of the American invasion of Iraq and would come in the wake of an American attack against Iran.
It's you know, it's so much more than that, too. On the home front, we have a government, literally, which betrayed the will of the American people, lied to the American people over and over and over again. A government that is guilty of treason at the highest level in terms of honoring the Constitution, its sworn right to uphold the best interests of the history of this country, the Bill of Rights, and on and on and on. The lies used to perpetrate this rape and pillage and destruction of a sovereign nation were unparalleled. And people, unfortunately, there's so much news going on, can't remember. They just can't hold on to this. This government is not a government at all. It really is, in many ways, at least in terms of foreign policy, an acting agent of a foreign country.
Right. Well, it would be dangerous if a group of people representing a very small percentage of the population were to have this kind of power over any aspect of our policy. But for a group that represents only 2 or 3% of the population to have this kind of control over our military and foreign policy, our international policy, is dangerous. I mean, the American people would be outraged if, say, Mormons had that kind of control in our society, or Scientologists, or any particular group, Muslims, whatever it happens to be.
Right,
but
good point.
Certainly,
yeah.
This is not representative of the vast majority of the American people, or certainly of American interests. But going back to another point, it's remarkable how, whether you look at this from a point of view of a constitutionalist, whether you're interested in a world peace, whether you regard yourself as a America firster, whether you regard yourself as a citizen of the world, however you slice it, however you look at it, this alliance with Israel is harmful to all of those interests, to all of those principles, and this is more and more obvious to more and more people. And it's a sad thing that we've already paid with the lives of so many people for this alliance.
1.2 million Iraqis have been butchered. How many thousands of Americans dead?
Of course, for Iraq. The immense destruction last year with the Israeli invasion of Lebanon. Of course, the thousands of Americans who have died in Iraq as well.
Wasted. But utterly wasted.
This is really criminal. And of course, even the war itself, by the standards by which the United States hanged German leaders at the end of World War II, mm-hmm. certainly America's leaders, if held to the same standards, would be punished with death. Now, that's a hard thing to say, but there's no getting around the truth of that statement. I recommend very highly to everyone this book by Walton Mearsheimer, precisely because it's written in a very sober, fact-packed way by mm-hmm. two men who are eminent, very prominent scholars of international relations, apart from this particular subject, are very prominent, even apart
oh, yeah.
from that.
Agreed. Yeah.
And if you read any part of this book, you cannot help but come away with a sense of outrage that the United States has been led down a path of such deceit and such lies, contrary to our interests and contrary to our principles.
The issue of overrepresentation is another one. Now, there are a lot of very successful Jewish Americans who are not pro-Israel, who are Americans, and who are sick and tired of Zionism leading them down the road and using them, which is what's been going on. I've been talking about this for a long time before anyone else would in the electronic media, and it is very encouraging to see this subject now being openly discussed, predicated on the book that Walt and Mearsheimer have courageously assembled, thought through, and then had published. This issue of overrepresentation, though, by a very small percentage of Americans is another one that kind of clouds the issue. 2 to 3% of the population. Vogue magazine, I think it's Vogue, not Vogue. Maybe
no,
it's
I think
Vogue.
You're thinking of this new survey by Vanity Fair magazine.
Vanity Fair.
Yes.
Vanity Fair magazine has surveyed the top 100 movers and shakers of the world, the strongest top 100 in the world. 50% of them are Jewish.
Yeah, more than half.
The majority
of these top movers and shakers, what they call power brokers by Vanity Fair, which is a very opulent capitalist type of magazine,
very
full of ads for expensive perfumes and so forth.
Forum, that's right.
But this isn't unusual. This identification of immense power wielded by a very small minority, and with a cohesion and a focus that no other single ethnic or religious group in America has.
Right.
This is identified not only by Vanity Fair, but by many others. The Washington Post has pointed out that in American presidential campaigns, about half of the money to Democratic candidates comes from Jews, and about one quarter of money for Republican candidates for president.
That's extraordinary.
More than any other single ethnic or religious group in the United States comes from this one group representing such a small percentage.
6 to 7 million Americans are identified as Jewish. There are about 13 million on the face of the earth out of 6.5 billion people. So the word overrepresentation becomes a legitimate and honest subject of investigative reporting. It's a fact. And it wouldn't matter to me, again, as Mark pointed out, if these were Scientologists or Mormons or Holy Rollers. It would still be an astonishing overrepresentation and power control grid composed of a very small group of people. And that's newsworthy. That's news. It's a fact of life. So, things to consider. All right, we'll be right back with Mark Weber of the Institute for Historical Review in just a minute. The amount of Jewish American overrepresentation in the professions in this country, the sciences, the arts, the entertainment industry, economics, banking, and so forth, was for many, many years something that was not talked about at all. It was taboo. And I remember having on the program years ago, Mark, a very famous Jewish American writer, just a brilliant man, and he told me on the air about a dinner he had gone to. No, I think it was off the air, just before the program. Very upscale dinner, formal dinner in New York, somebody's big house, estate, and there were about a dozen or so people there. And he made mention at the table of the incredible power of the Jewish elite via their campaign contributions in the American political process.
Right.
And another Jewish guest at the dinner literally stood up from his chair and pounded on the table and yelled at him. He said, "You know you're not supposed to talk about those things."
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And that was the truth. And that happened, you know, some years ago. But that is the case here. And it did, now it's being talked about, and rightly so, because it's news. It's journalism. It's a fact of life.
Well, it's a very ominous thing that this power is so great that those people who even acknowledge that it exists are punished by that very same power.
Well,
the acknowledgement of that power, as you point out, is now so widespread that former President Jimmy Carter has gotten into trouble.
You mean that anti-Semite?
Called an anti-Semite, or David Horowitz calls him a Jew hater of all things.
There you go.
Unbelievable, yeah. Unbelievable. And it shows that no matter what your previous position, what your previous status, once you say these unutterable, these unmentionable facts, these people who feel so viciously, so strongly about that will turn on you just as rapidly, just as viciously, as if you're some marginal person.
You're immediately cataloged, of course, and put on the enemies list in any one of a number of locations. And the mechanism begins to turn against you. They have a machine, folks, with many, many tentacles.
Just the other day, Ann Coulter got into big hot water for saying that she thought Jews should become Christians. And the Anti-Defamation League and the Simon Wiesenthal both denounced her for her so-called anti-Semitic remarks. This is unbelievable.
Yeah, it's true.
If this is true, then it means that the New Testament is anti-Semitic. It means that Jesus was anti-Semitic. It means that St. Paul was anti-Semitic. Because the very first people that the early Christians tried to reach and convert were Jews. And for Ann Coulter or for any Christian to say that one should not try to bring the good news of Jesus to Jews has given up and has betrayed their own faith.
Mm-hmm.
But this is typical of the just overreaction, the hysterical way.
Well, that's
in which
what they
these
do.
These kind of remarks are dealt with.
That's been their tactic. They explode on someone, anyone, and try to make their life so miserable they never do it again, and they make an example out of them.
That's the main thing. It's not even what happens to that person. It makes an example of it, because very few people can put up with in their own life, with their friends, their wives, and so forth, the kind of smears that come as a result of this. And Jimmy Carter saw a whole lot of members of his of the board of the Jimmy Carter Center that he runs mm-hmm. resign in protest as a result of his statement that, completely true statement, that American politicians are enormously intimidated by the power of this lobby. Just the other day, Bishop Desmond Tutu of South Africa
right.
had his invitation to a university withdrawn because his acknowledgement of this same situation was regarded as anti-Semitic. It's just unbelievable. If applied in any other way, people would be up in arms and they would be very unhappy about these violations or these assaults against freedom of speech. But Americans have been trained, have been conditioned to give a pass when it comes to Israel or to organized Jewry and so forth in such a way that we would be indignant if it applies in any other way.
And Alan Stang last night gave me a perfect example of immediately how you can tell if you've been brainwashed. You remember years ago, and it's becoming less so now, if one would even say the word Jew, one would do so very quietly, hesitantly,
yes.
and with trepidation
right.
because of our training, our programming that Jews suffered so terribly in World War II that we're not allowed to criticize them.
We're barely allowed even to use the word. This morning when I was driving into work, I heard Rush Limbaugh again. He was talking, I think, about Catholics and Muslims, and then Jewish people, because even to
say Jews
sounds very harsh, and we have to be very sensitive and so forth. This is unbelievable. This is this is an example of a double standard that applies not merely in political ways, but in our cultural life, in our conditioning as a people.
Exactly. Now, again, until we can get past that, and unless we can get past it, we will literally continue to submit to this kind of international control over our country, our destinies, our lives, our finances, and all the rest of it. And don't make the mistake of thinking that all Jewish Americans are bad. They're not. That is not the issue here. And people of the Jewish faith, that's not the issue here either. This is a geopolitical movement that's been around for 100 years now. It's called Zionism.
In that regard, Jeff, I wanted to mention that one of the first persons to enlighten me about this was Alfred Lilienthal.
Oh, yeah.
He's a Jewish American. He's now pretty elderly. But he wrote a book that was in many ways a predecessor, a trailblazer to the one by Walt Mearsheimer. His book is called The Zionist Connection.
It's
and he laid
book.
Out many of
yeah.
these very same facts that Walt Mearsheimer had laid out, of course not updated in the same way, but all of that was laid out pretty clearly back even then.
Mm-hmm.
And Alfred Lilienthal is a sterling example of a man who was sounding the alarm, pointing these things out back when it was very difficult, and he's now being vindicated in many ways by many more people.
So do you want, ladies and gentlemen, your country, your lives, your future, your children's future dictated by a small, very small special interest group? Now remember, there's 6 or 7 million Jewish Americans in this country. And of that, only a small percentage really form the controllers who are beholden to their brethren in the state of Israel, traced back right to the Rothschilds in England. Is that what you want, or would you rather have a more equitable, representative form of control and power in this country, made up of many different peoples from many different persuasions? Sounds a little better to me, but, well, it's up to you. Be right back. Okay, talking with Mark Weber, historian, author, and director of the Institute for Historical Review, which has some really amazing books, which I draw your attention to most highly. Okay, so here we are in the year 2007. Our foreign policy dominated by neocons, who, if you'll check the roster, are extraordinarily dominated in turn by Jewish Americans. The head of the Department of so-called Homeland Security is a dual citizen of Israel. How many other examples are there, Mark, of top powerful people in this administration, appointed by Bush and others, who are dual citizens or certainly are dual loyalists, who do not have America necessarily as their first priority? They look at this nation, and I guess they should, as a cash cow.
Well, I think the important thing to keep in mind is that long before a politician has to be influenced or handled, you might say, g- getting while he's in office is the vetting process.
They have to pass a litmus test. They have to go through a litmus test.
Yes, because long before a candidate gets to any higher position, long before he's even in a prominent position in the primary campaign, or even to be elected to the U.S. Congress, groups like the ADL, the Wiesenthal Center, AIPAC, have all made sure that these candidates, these politicians, are firmly on their side, in their pocket, as it were, and that that's the dangerous thing, because George Bush didn't suddenly have an awareness, or it didn't suddenly fall in line after he became president. He was very firmly in that whole pattern long before he became president. And that's the ominous thing, is that the candidates now on the Democratic and Republican side who look like the likely successor to George Bush are, if anything, even more so pro-Israel. And I'm thinking of Giuliani. Giuliani has, as one of his advisors, this raving Zionist, Norman Podhoretz, who's been calling for invading and attacking half a dozen countries in the Middle East, and who has also been telling Giuliani, and he also told President Bush, that he ought to be attacking Iran. And Hillary Clinton is so fervent, so staunch in her support for Israel. Just the other week, her campaign, and she issued a statement so strongly in favor of Israel that it was issued only to Jewish groups and not put on her own campaign official website. She said that she said the American support for a safe, secure Israel as a staunch Jewish state must not even be questioned, she said. Must not even be questioned. Now, this is the only country in the world that the United States guarantees in this way. That is, it guarantees or staunchly supports even its ethnic religious character. This is contrary to what we say even about our own country. We don't even defend our own country's character in any religious, ethnic, or racial, or any other way. Yeah. But we do that in the case of Israel. Mm-hmm. But Hillary Clinton and Giuliani, who many people think are the top candidates, of course, the others are just as well, but just taking those two, are firmly already in line. So
whoever
fills up their positions, when they get in office, it's almost not as important as the fact that they're firmly committed to these policies even before they're elected.
Well, so is Pelosi, of course. And look, the issue of Giuliani, for just openers, he has lined his top-level campaign staff with arch neocons. Daniel Pipes just joined.
Mm-hmm.
He's got the killer elite who have left the Bush camp, have now migrated to Giuliani. They see him as their number one horse to ride, their ticket to ride.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have Daniel Pipes on your team, that tells me all I need to know.
Well, he of course is much closer to the whole situation because he was the mayor of New York, of course, and he had to be very, very conscious of this power when he was mayor of New York. But this means that the American people on these great issues of war and peace and on the great issue of immigration, two issues that are as decisive of the character and the future of a nation as any issue can be, have been sold out by both the parties. By both the parties. The Democrats have sold out their base of support on the issue of war, and the Republican Party has sold out their base of support on the issue of immigration. On both of those issues, the leaders of the parties are acting contrary to the wishes expressed time and time again in public opinion polls on these of the American people.
Okay, so without access to the mainstream media, which is controlled and certainly subservient to these very interests in many most cases, what are Americans to do? Their voices are so easily stepped on, silenced, threatened. They are so easily smeared and libeled, which I certainly have been, you certainly have been, and many others have been. It's a very daunting and courageous thing that we do in trying to inform people about the reality of who's controlling this country.
That's right, Jeff. I mean, I don't want to, you know, sound like I'm just giving a lot of praise, but you deserve a tremendous amount of respect, I think, for speaking out on these issues when you don't have to. You could just sit back and keep quiet about that and continue to talk about those issues that are safe, so to speak. But the fact that you have spoken out as forcefully as you can on this issue, on issues of free speech, when it goes against the power establishment, that's a tremendously important thing. And very few people are willing to put up with the smears, with the problems, with the heartache, with the headache that comes with that. You know, one U.S. congressman said he was asked, why did you vote for this resolution? Why did you sign off on this issue, even though you don't agree with it? It had to do with Israel. He said, I'd rather sign one letter than answer 5,000 letters. And, okay, but what the result is that he's selling out the interests of our country. He's selling out his principles by doing it. And it happens time and time again. And many people, most people, take the easy road. Because what we're up against is a power that's very, very conscious, very focused, very determined, because they're playing for big, big stakes here.
Incredibly well organized. Brilliant.
Very well organized. Very well organized. Far better organized than any other comparable group.
Agreed.
I mean, well, Catholics make up, perhaps 40%, 30% of the population in the United States. They have nothing like the organizational clout that the Jewish community in America has.
One phone call triggers an avalanche of protest directed at any target, any media outlet, any company, any business, any individual in this country. That's it. And they have the organization to do it. They have unlimited financial resources to do it. They certainly, as we all know, control to a very large degree American telecommunications. They do the billing for something like 90% of our cell phone industry and telephone. They also, and I'm talking about Israeli companies, built, designed, and installed the ultra-above-top-secret communication systems between the White House and the Pentagon, for example. And do you think that they didn't build backdoor, software packages? They've got backdoors everywhere. They know exactly what goes on in this country. All right, hold on. We'll be right back with Mark Weber in just a couple minutes. Okay, back with Mark Weber. A perfect example of the control of this neocon, Israeli first, dual citizen, dual loyalty, Zionist cancer that has invaded, infested, and taken a great deal of control away from America and Americans, is certainly the looting of the Pentagon to the tune of apparently $3.5 trillion under the stewardship of Rabbi Dov Zakheim, who has long since fled and is, by the way, in charge of a company now which manufactures, among other things, the auto control mechanisms for remote controlling airliners. Interesting. Well, he was in charge, the comptroller of the money at the Pentagon. Upwards of $3.5 trillion vanished. This story was beginning to take on enormous proportions just before September 11th. And where did that, whatever it was, hit the Pentagon? It struck the Pentagon, not where Don Rumsfeld and all of his neocon cronies were hanging out, but on the opposite side. In fact, it did a 260-degree swoop around the Pentagon to hit this side. A new rebuilt portion of the Pentagon, wherein, we are told, auditing was going on to look into this robbery, this theft of $3.5 trillion. Of course, all of that was lost, all the documents were lost, and the issue is now really unknown to probably 99.5% of Americans. Just another example of power, ladies and gentlemen, power politics being played at the highest level. We have given the Zionist state of Israel well over $1 trillion since it was forcibly implanted into the Middle East. That money, of course, is called loans. None of it has ever been paid back. None of it ever will be paid back. Not a penny of it. The treachery on the other end is extraordinary. American military technology given to Israel has been sold to our enemies, the Chinese, as an example. We could go on for hours with this stuff. But the outrage of this, I think, Mark Weber, is that it has gone on for decades here and is now so incredibly entrenched into the fabric and the structure of this country's geopolitics. I don't know how it could be removed.
Well, appropriate of that, some years ago, Admiral Thomas Moore, who was chairman of the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff, he said this, and it's quoted in the book by former Congressman Paul Finley. He said, I've never seen a president, I don't care who he is, stand up to them, that is the Israeli. It just boggles the mind. They always get what they want. The Israelis know what is going on all the time. I got to the point where I wasn't writing anything down. If the American people understood what a grip those people have got on our government, they would rise up in arms. Our citizens certainly don't have any idea what goes on, unquote. Now, that's the former head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff of the top military man in the United States.
Yeah.
If he knows this, and everyone in Washington knows this, but the American people, unfortunately, are not rising up in arms. They're either ignorant, or they're afraid, or they're lazy. And it's a very dangerous situation in any country when people turn over their power to others who don't have their interests at heart. They have no reason and no right to complain. And that's why shows like this one are very important, because they are important beacons in a time of such widespread ignorance and deceit and lies.
All we're trying to do here, and you listeners know, is inform you of the facts. You do what you want with them. The issue here is journalism. And if Hillary Clinton, the New World Order candidate, the clear choice to take over the White House and give us 8 more years of the Bush-Clinton regime, which is what it is, takes office, one of the first things she'll do is sign the so-called anti-hate bill, which will no doubt be put on her desk very shortly after she sits down at her desk in the Oval Office. And once that's signed, programs like this and other programs on the other end of the spectrum will be literally changed overnight, or they'll be gone. That's the truth of the matter. That will be the end of free speech. It's fading fast in California now. Our young people there are in school to learn, but now they're no longer able to say certain things, even in jest, even if they don't know what the words mean. If they criticize the homosexual group, for example, in their school, they will be probably called in, severely disciplined, threatened with expulsion, forced to undergo some kind of rehabilitation, clinical training, retraining, sensitization, as it were. Their parents will, too, if the parents are found to be in any way contributing to what the child may or may not be saying, teachers as well, and on and on. I mean, this is really Marxist indoctrination at its most ruthless and brutal level. And I think many of you see that now, and this in California. It's amazing.
Well, many Americans, I think, like to hope that once the Bush administration is over, we can go back to things being normal or better or something.
Forget it, folks.
Yeah, forget it.
They're not going to give up power.
Both parties are so in lockstep on this important issue that we're talking about, of course, and other issues as well, that the interests of the American people have been sold out. And this is a horrible situation. We have to revive the same spirit that people once had in America at Lexington and Concord, at the time of the Revolution, even the same militant spirit of the Civil War, or certainly the spirit of the Alamo, or other times in American history where people have stood up and have acted, and without fear, even at the fear of great sacrifice. But unless and until that's done, this power can't be broken, and we will continue going in the direction we're going in now, which more and more Americans realize is a catastrophic one.
It is. This is supposed to be a representative government. That means representing all groups. Catholic, Protestant, Baptist, Jewish, Muslim Americans, you name it, even the Scientologists. I don't care who they are. We're supposed to have equal voice to some degree. Not talking about necessarily strictly proportional representation, but look at the Vanity Fair article and ask yourself, why are the majority of America's 100 most powerful men and women Jewish? What's going on here, when there are so very few of them on the planet? It's called overrepresentation. And then you have, of course, you talk about lockstep. Most of them, of course, are leaned on by the Zionists. And if they don't come along, they too are pressured, just like people on the outside, like Mark Weber and other journalists and myself, who are simply trying to inform about the reality of the preponderance of power in this country, which is held by a tiny, tiny minority. So, and that's just the fact of the matter.
Well, you'll find much more about this in two places that I want to strongly recommend. First of all, our website has a lot, and I recommend very highly the book by Walt Mearsheimer, which is available in bookstores all across the United States. It's been on the New York Times bestseller list. It's been on the Los Angeles Times bestseller list. And it represents not only an important thing in and of itself, but as a symptom and as an expression as of something that's changing, I think, in America and the world.
When Walt and Mearsheimer are denied speaking venues, it becomes comical. It is absurd. And yet no one in Washington is standing up to propose legislation to set. This is discrimination. It's reverse discrimination against them, people who wish to speak out and have an equal footing in this country in which to purvey their views, their ideals. And as you said, it's, I forget who you quoted, but one of the congressmen in this country said it's easier to answer one letter and make one vote than to have to deal with 5,000 or 10,000 letters. And they have form letters. They have telephone chains. Trees, they're called. All they have to do is make a phone call, and any congressman or senator's office is immediately overwhelmed with pressure.
That's the pressure that comes if you just don't do anything. If you speak out and you say, I'm in favor of a balanced policy in the Middle East, anything along those lines, like Jimmy Carter or whatever, then you get the real treatment. Then immense money is put in to try to defeat you in the elections. You're smeared in the press and the media. It's unbelievable the kind of treatment that people undergo.
They call and have called those people, called my guests and pretended to be my producer. One of them pretended to be me and said that I no longer wanted this particular guest on my program. This has happened four or five times. They email people saying, Mr. Rentz does not want you to email him anymore. I mean, the tricks they play, they have every trick in the book, from death threats to email threats to form letter threats, and they use them. And I cannot tell you how many times sponsors have told me that they've been threatened off before they even come on this program. So all of our sponsors that I endorse and support really are deserving of your support because they are courageous and they're standing up to this very dominance that we're trying to alert people about.
Well, a lot of the credit, I think, for the breakthrough has to go to the Internet. As I mentioned on a number of occasions, not even Walt Mearsheimer's voices would have gotten anywhere near the audience they have had.
Correct.
Except that the article that was the beginning of this, or the basis of the book that's now out, couldn't even get published in the United States. It was published in Britain. But it doesn't matter anymore, because no matter where something is published now, once it's on the Internet, it's all around the world. And it caused an enormous furor all over just because of the Internet. And, of course, your radio show and our website and our ability to reach people is immensely enhanced now. It's created a much more even playing field. And this has allowed many more people around the world to sort out the facts for themselves in a way that never used to be possible.
We are, and I can speak for myself, and I think certainly for you, Mark, we are asking and seeking equality. That's all in this country. We think that everyone should have a voice, not just one special interest group.
Well, you can always tell where the truth lies, because the people that don't like the truth try to suppress it. They try to shut people up. They smear them. They pass laws preventing them from speaking. They don't give them. They shut down their meeting halls. That tells you who's against truth and who the enemy ought to be, who we should look at and not trust. And this is a very dangerous situation that the very people who have deceived us so much with the Iraq War are still on the media. We're supposed to still listen to them now about the supposed threat from Iran.
Well, indeed it is supposed at this point. And all right. Again, thank you, Mark, for all you do. And thanks for being here tonight to enlighten people about this astonishing power that is being wielded over this country. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jeff, for having me on again.
Good night.
Good night.
Mark Weber of the Institute for Historical Review, IHR.org. Be right back.